Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Kevin.
I guess we're going to talk about Patreon a little bit.
Yeah, there's a lot of confusion out there.
Now that we actually have, you know, some content going on over there, let's talk about Patreon. This, if you're listening to this right now, this is an ad for Patreon, which means you're listening to it on our free podcast. 100% free, will always be free, free all the time. And you're listening to that, so you know that. You didn't pay anything for this podcast. However, we have a supplemental... we have bonus content on a website called Patreon. Patreon.com/KevinTheStrange is where you can go to listen to bonus podcasts from not only Reading to Strangers, but from Watching with Strangers and Ranting at Strangers also. Our other podcasts on the Strangeville Podcast Network.
At certain levels, you also get full audiobooks.
Yeah.
Access to early, you know, written content as well.
Yes. And heavy discounts. My book... I Died in a Bed of Roses is coming out this month, and for everyone else, it's going to be $15 to pre-order that book, signed and shipped from me. For our patrons at the $5 and up level, that book is only going to be $10. You'll be able to get that book signed, personalized from me, and shipped. No shipping cost on your end. We'll have a link to buy that for $10 on our for our $5 and up patrons. So that's just another bonus you get.
So it's like getting the book and a bunch of free content for the same price as just the book.
Like Jeremy said, you get those you get the audiobooks up front before they air serialized on the podcast. We do about 20 to 25 minutes a week of a particular book, but as a $5 and up patron on Patreon.com, you get access to that full audiobook with no commercials, absolutely uncut, unedited, right there up front at the beginning of the month. So right now, you can listen to, if you sign up at the $5 level today, you get to read the entire, or I'm sorry, you get to listen to the entire audiobook of The Humans Under the Bed by Kevin Strange and McHumans by Kevin Strange, and that's over 3 hours of content right there at the $5 level, plus the discounts on the books, plus you get shout-outs at the end of every month for being a patron, and a bunch of other
cool
stuff.
All about value.
And we do that because that's the Patreon is how we fund the operation. We give you free podcasts that don't involve outside advertising. This is our advertising. If you donate even as little as $1 a month, you help us fund the operation, all right? So that's the difference between the free podcast and the Patreon. So we appreciate you listening to this ad. And you got anything to add there, Jeremy?
Just go to patreon.com/KevinTheStrange if you're interested. Hey, Kevin. What do you want to do about this podcast intro?
For Reading to Strangers?
Yeah.
I always think we download this broody ass music. Then you'd be like, read to strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to strangers. I'd be like, read to strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to strangers. Then I shoot myself in the head. Pow!
See, I was thinking more like Reading Rainbow's theme song.
Like with LeVar Burton?
Yeah.
Like, take a look. It's in a book. That shit.
Yeah, but like, reading to strangers.
Reading to strangers. Reading to strangers. No, that's a terrible idea. Welcome, friends, strangers, and countrymen, to another episode of Reading to Strangers. Are we reading to strangers, at strangers, with strangers? I can't keep track.
Or for strangers.
Are we reading for We read for the strangers. We read
because
for
that's you. What we are. We're strangers, too. We sounds like political ad. We read to strangers.
How you doing there, Jeremy Daniels?
Awesome, Kevin Strange. How are you doing?
I'm good. This is the Reading to Strangers literary podcast where we serialize my audiobooks, play a little week to week, and talk about stuff.
Oh.
Do you know that I am an award-winning filmmaker?
Really?
I won an award in 2009 at the Tulsa, Oklahoma Underground Film Festival run by a cat named Art Sunday. I won my feature film Nixon and Hogan Smoke Christmas. Award, the 2009 Best Film to Smoke To award.
Took me like 5 years to see that film because you kept running out of copies and finally you just gave me a digital version of it.
Yeah. I'm also a literary award winner. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, I've heard.
The 2000, I think it was the 2014 Peppermint Rooster Review Editor's Choice Award for my short story, God's Act.
Good story.
Yeah, I got paid a little loot for that, too. Oh, so I came with a cash prize, and I got a nice award downstairs. So, I guess you would say I'm a two-division champion, right?
Well, yeah.
Two-division champion. Mm-hmm. Filmmaking and writing.
So, this is an announcement for your artwork now. So, you're going to try to hit a trifecta. Start drawing pictures, Kevin Strange.
Try to draw a picture. Well, I don't know. There's never been a three-division champion before, so I don't know if I could pull that off, but... You know, it makes a lot of people upset that I'm even a two-division champion. A lot of people that don't have any championships at all.
People are upset just because you're breathing. Come on. It's just the world we live in.
When you have people that have no championships, and they come after guys that are, you know, even one-division champions, let alone a two-division champ like myself, they tend to take an opposite approach. They can't beat me at my game, right? I'm too talented to... come at me and try to be a, you know, somebody
Can't
else.
Can't work. I mean, if they put more time in their craft, maybe they would have a chance. But.
And they could maybe be a three-division champ. Maybe win awards in music, awards in filmmaking.
I didn't think of music.
And awards in...
Kind of strange
in,
rap album.
Yeah. You know, I used to be in a rap group. No, nobody knows this. I've never talked about this on the air.
I've never heard it myself. I've known you before that.
You didn't know I was in a Juggalo rap group?
No, I did not.
So 2001, 2002, about 22 years old, should have been old enough to know better. And I started a rap group with one of my friends. We were called Wicked Life.
Wicked Life.
And we wrote some bomb ass tracks, and we I had a.
Do you have any of this recorded?
Absolutely none of it.
Okay.
Keep in mind, this was 2001, 2002, where recording technology wasn't like it is now. So
I was just hoping.
What we did was we had I downloaded this free beat making program.
Wow.
And I made all of our beats, and then we would put the beats on loop, and we would write raps to the looped beats, and then this is the best part, we would get our friends to come over to the apartment, and we weren't even off page. We had to rap off of our notebooks that we had our lyrics in. We would put the beat on loop in the apartment.
Wow, and rap, live rap concerts.
And rap over the fucking beat and do live rap concerts. Now, why is this important to what we're talking about?
God only knows.
Because I had a very, very specific, goals for our rap group. Because one of the things that I noticed, even all the way back in 2001 and 2002, was how vicious and how trolly people were online, and how easy it was to upload music onto the internet and have people absolutely eviscerate it and eviscerate you just for doing it. And so I told my friend that I was in this group with, I said, if we do this, we are not going to be YouTube rappers. We are not going to be internet rappers. We're going to create physical media. We're going to create CDs, we're going to create flyers, and we are going to travel around, and we are going to hand out CD samplers, and we are going to hand out flyers, and we're going to do this the old school way, person to person, and we're going to put this music in people's hands so that there is a physical, human connection between the music and the listener, because the internet is too easy. There's too many people there. The access to the music is too simple. People can listen to it for free and judge it super harshly because it's free, it's disposable. You know, even back then, music was super disposable. And so I said, the only way we're going to succeed, we will not be able to succeed if we join that, you know, mass of internet rappers. We'll just be just another whack-ass group. People are going to tell us we're bad lyricists, we have bad beats. People are going to absolutely eviscerate us just for existing. So we're going to do it old school. And it never got to that point. We gave up on that fairly quickly. And I think that one of the reasons I gave up on it so quickly was I never wanted to be a rapper, but I wanted to promote, and I wanted to flyer, and I wanted to have something to put in people, an art, some type. I wanted a message to give to my fellow man. I wanted to, you know, explain my experience here on Earth, my perspective of the universe, you know what I mean? Communicate that to people. And very quickly that evolved from my upstart juggalo rap career to filmmaking and Hack Movies. And you know what? I did the same fucking thing. With Hack Movies, I made those discs. I probably, over Hack Movies' lifetime, I probably burned 10,000 promotional discs that had trailers and teaser scenes and little skits promoting the films. Probably burned 10,000 of those, which doesn't sound like a lot. 10,000 views on a YouTube video, for example, isn't an impressive number. But physical media, when I was going to conventions that had maybe 2,000 or 2,500 people attend the whole weekend, and I would hand out, you know, 500 to 1,000 discs to those people, it was a big deal. And as crappy as those movies were, my ideology, my perspective of putting art into people's hands as opposed to just being some digital nobody was it worked, and we really started to make a dent in the independent film world, even though those movies are really crappy. And we've talked about on this show before that some of my fans from Hack Movies, they still beg me to this day to make more films. And I don't think they would have done that if I would have just gone straight to the internet, if I would have just made YouTube videos. Everybody's on YouTube. Everybody makes YouTube videos. It was the fact that I was making feature films and putting them on DVD and putting them in people's hands directly and going out to film festivals and doing screenings at horror conventions and doing Q&As and handing out flyers and all the stuff that I did. So what does this have to do with Reading to Strangers? Because I fucked up, Jeremy Daniels.
How'd you fuck up?
When I switched over to writing books, while I still continued with that attitude, and I went to conventions with you and lots of people, and we did flyers, after a while, I just started relying on the internet. I just kind of gave up going out on the road. I kind of gave up on being a visceral artist who put physical media in people's hands and created a human connection. And instead, I just sort of sat back and was relying on Kindle sales. And I became a Facebook writer, like all these others that we've talked about on this show.
Yeah.
And I became a full-time social media guy. You know, with Hack Movies, we did a lot of social media on MySpace. But we did it with little robots. You know, I wasn't there. I didn't sit on MySpace 24/7 and try to promote my stuff to people. I had these bot programs that did it for me. The kind of bot programs people accuse me of using to refresh my, my website statistics today, you know. And over time, I became just another one of those internet jackoffs. And what happened? What happened as soon as I stopped reaching people physically and started reaching people digitally and just became just another full-time Facebook author? No respect. I'm a two-division champion. I've exceeded all expectations I ever had of my art. And yet when you just jump in to the digital world and you just become another jabroni, they fucking don't respect you at all. They eviscerate you. They fucking try to destroy you. For a couple of reasons. But one, because digital is so easy. It's so easy to steal books or just to have a Kindle Unlimited, you know, $9.99 a month to read as many books as you want. You think you're going to give a book a fair shot when you can just cast it off and grab the next one for free and the next one for free and the next one for free? It's not the same is committing to a book or even buying a book in person from the author himself at a book reading or a Q&A or a convention where they have a table. It's a totally different experience. You have a different connection, emotional connection to art when it's just farted out onto the internet. And that's going to change. We're going to go back
soon.
Fundamentally, we're going to change gears on this career. We're going to go back to the rap career. We're going to go back to the...
I thought you meant we're like just going to go around and do Reading to Strangers in people's houses.
That's what I mean. I mean, we're going to go back to the Wicked Life days. We're going to go back to the old school Juggalo rap career days. And here in the next couple of days, I'm going to get a shitload of flyers printed up for Reading to Strangers and the website, kevinthestrange.com. And we're going to hit the road.
Awesome.
We're going to hit the road here in a few weeks.
Yeah, the 17th, is it?
So, it's like 3 weeks.
3 weeks away, yeah. Yeah,
3 weeks from now. And it's real time because we're recording this, like, you know, less than 12 hours. Yesterday. Or less than 24 hours, yeah, before the episode airs. And, you know, because I haven't been on social media in 3 months. I haven't logged in to Facebook or Twitter or anything. Logged into Twitter once just to check something, but and I'm feeling like myself again. I'm feeling like that guy that has a lot to say and is really passionate about my perspective in this universe, but I'm realizing again that there's a world outside of social media, and 3 months away from it is really all you know. People say that if you can do something for 90 days, it creates a habit. And so, or break a habit, you know, the same thing. If you can quit something for 90 days, it's a, you can quit it. And I've been social media free for 90 days, and I feel my head is so clear, and I've gotten so much work done. You know, I finished that that Barbarian story that I was working on, Jorek and the Swamp Phantoms of Ik, and we actually recorded it as an audiobook to start Barbarian Month next week. I don't know which one we're going to start with, but I mentioned that because I'm actually I'm on to a third Barbarian story.
I saw that on your Snapchat chat.
And I have a new novel all the way outlined. I outlined a novel before I got started on the third Jorek story, because as soon as I finish this Jorek story, that's a collection. We're actually going to release a Jorek collection, and then I'm going to move on to my next novel, and I'm hoping for it to be the longest novel I've ever written, for a few reasons. One is just as a challenge. You know how you win awards, gang? You win awards by challenging yourself, by being realistic about your shortcomings and flaws, and by trying to fill those gaps and get better at the things you're not very good at. And one of the things that I've never done is I've never written a book longer than 45,000 words. And I'm going to try to write a book, and it might fall in that range because that's just what I'm comfortable with.
Go over 100,000.
I don't want to go over 100, because like a 90, like 85 to 90,000 is a 350-page carousel paperback, mass market paperback. 85,000 to 90,000. That's my goal. If I hit 70,000, I'll be fine. If I hit 75, I'll be happy. If I hit 80, that'll be great. If I hit 85, I will be ecstatic. But I don't know if I have an 85,000 word book in me. I don't know if I have that much story to tell for each of my stories. You know what I mean? I won't do it to just be filler. If it comes out boring and I'm just rambling like I'm doing right now.
Well, it's kind of weird. We have a light bulb out in the studio and you're just kind of slow talking, smooth talking. It's a very intimate. It's a very, reading to strangers.
It is a very intimate episode.
So if we just start making out here in a little bit, well, yeah, you know, forgive us.
Just listen close.
Staring at some dude in very light.
Listen for the slappy, sloppy lip smacks. Yeah. I don't know. I've been reflecting on that. I've been reflecting on how I got away from my sort of core beliefs about how to spread my message and what the important thing was. And that the thing that was always the most important to me was that physical connection with people. That's why I fucking smashed on the convention circuit for so long, was because, yeah, we were selling online, but fuck online. If I can't see you and talk to you and touch you in person, then that, to me, that isn't the right connection. Until I'm dead. Once I'm dead, people will have my stuff, you know, they can get my stuff however they want. But while I'm alive and have the opportunity, you know, every live reading that I've ever done, fiction-wise, people have always praised me for it. People that today call me a piece of shit used to praise me for my public speaking abilities back when we were all buddies. So, you know, those are things that I haven't done in a few years. I haven't been out on the road doing readings and shit in 2 years. And I can feel it. I can feel the connection fading away. And I think a lot of the reason that people are reacting to me the way they are, well, one is because I'm just being honest and I'm not towing the fucking SJW party line in the particular field that I'm writing in. But another thing is just there's no physical connection there, you know?
Yeah, but
That's always big. You can definitely see the difference between how people reacted to you online than how they reacted when we went to the conventions. All right.
It's night and day.
Yeah.
It really is. And I think it's, again, because those people don't know me, and it's just a shit fest online. Online, you have two. There's two modes. You either 100% completely agree with me, or you're a piece of shit. Racist, misogynist, fucking homophobic, whatever. And it's
like Milo.
Milo, yeah.
I like calling him Milo.
Whatever.
It's like Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah. Milo. But a gay dude with that likes to suck black dicks. So we have our last...
The finale of...
The last...
McHumans.
Last part of McHumans. And this is the part where... I always do this. I never listen to the reading right before we do the show, so I can't ever remember where the last part leaves off and the next part begins. I remember, though, because we talked about it on last week's show. This is right when Cthulhu pukes up the main character, Ricky. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about everything that happens after the break. Next month we have Barbarian Month starting, so we'll talk about that after the break too. Oh, but we do have some announcements, don't we?
Yeah.
Well, the editing of my next book, I Died in a Bed of Roses, is completed. Sean Ferrari, editor supreme, actually sat in the hospital while his wife was in labor, and he edited my fucking book. That's how badass of an editor this motherfucker is. He was pulling double duty. He was pulling dad duty and fucking editor duty. And he did. He rocked through that motherfucker. He fucking got into it and completed the editing on my book. That's the fastest he's ever edited one of my books.
I generally didn't have time sitting around waiting a lot of the time, and as you know, the mail and the birthing process, you're just kind of sitting there trying to stay low so you don't take shots from the girl who now blames you for everything because you're the one that did this to her. And that's a common phrase said during that. So, you know, I mean, he did have a little bit of time to sit and reflect, and that's not the time you want to reflect during that stressful time.
So. Right. So, they gave birth?
Yes, they did.
A little boy.
Nope.
We've been given permission to announce that here on Reading to Strangers. There's a new Ferrari in the world. Little Austin Ferrari.
Oh, I always thought that was Jeremy Kevin Ferrari. Or Kevin Jeremy. I don't remember which one we agreed upon.
Kevin Jeremy Ferrari. No, little Austin Ferrari exists. And it's a good thing, too, because I've told Sean that I'm ramping up my release schedule, and I want to do 6 books this year. So his editing duties are going to be... they're going to increase exponentially, and it's good that he had a baby boy, because that means in around 15 years there'll be another editor. We can start putting books in little Austin's hands in about 15 years and get him into the business.
Probably think he would do better than some that's out there editing.
Some so-called editors in small press.
Alleged editors.
Yeah. Alleged editor. I like that. I like alleged editors. Yeah, so we're real happy about that, and we'll definitely figure out a way to get Sean on here, because he's currently living in Colorado. Now, we could bring him...
With the Patreon Twisted thing that we gave to everybody, the phone, these mics are good enough to pick up the phone really well.
Well, I was thinking, they have the headphone jack? What if we plug the phone? Do you think that would pick up...
That doesn't go in, and
it only comes out. So we
but
could,
him on speaker.
Yeah,
right?
We could
you
just
heard
put
that
on
music. It was
yeah,
fairly
it was very
current.
Good. Yeah. So maybe we'll do that. We'll get him on the. You want to call him right now?
Yeah, let's do it.
Do it. Call him right now. We'll talk to him about his little baby. Little baby Austin Ferrari.
Ferrari.
The cover art is coming along quite nicely too. From Will Scar is doing. I don't think I've announced that yet. That's the name of the cover artist for. Are we going? Here we go.
Sean can't talk. He lost
his voice.
What? He lost his voice?
We're live on the air.
Yeah. He got, like, laryngitis or something.
We're live on the air.
Well, this is the Proud Mother, right? Is this KT?
Yeah.
Well, you're live on the air with that Reading to Strangers.
Oh, shit.
We just announced it.
You don't get John. No Sean for you. You guys are screwed.
Oh, yeah. That kind of blew up, but... So, congratulations.
Thank you. I am tired as fuck.
Really? Just gave birth and you're tired?
Yeah, I know, right? How dare I?
Tell us about the... Tell us about your experience.
What was that?
Tell us about your experience.
About my experience? Well, you know, it's excruciating pain. And then you take this being, and instead of it bursting out of your stomach, it comes out the hole. Is it meant to release? Well, I guess meant
to release. Yeah, as I said, I think it's genetically designed. What was that?
It does. I said, you don't want to see your carotid expanding to the size of a cantaloupe. Like, you want to see your back's not meant for that. But it's basically what it is meant for.
It's kind of all it's meant for.
I was going to say, it's pretty much all it's meant for. And I don't know about your specific vagina, but I know they are quite expandable. I've done research.
Jeremy likes the...
You know, I'm sure you have.
Jeremy likes the porn.
Jeremy
likes the porn where the dudes stick their heads in the vaginas.
Like a party hat.
like returning to whence they came.
Have Sean screech at us on the phone for a second, then we'll let you guys go. I knew he was going to say no. All right.
Well, you kids have fun. We'll talk to you later, okay?
All right. All right.
Well,
all right.
That happened.
Yeah.
It was unplanned.
It was an experience.
We got what we got. And with that, I guess we're going to listen to the final part of McHumans. Is that all the announcements we needed to do?
We covered the convention coming up. We covered the Ferrari's joy. And you covered some of your book stuff. I mean, is there anything else? So what story are you going to be throwing up? Usually throw stories up and...
Oh, yeah. We did... do you want to talk about that now or you want to just talk about that after?
We'll come back after the break.
Yeah, we're 25 minutes.
Yeah, we'll come after the break.
We'll talk about a lot of stuff after the break. So... we'll see you guys on the other side.
On the other side.
What's up, you reader fucks? My name's Kevin Strange.
And this is Travis.
And we're here from the Watching with Strangers podcast, because there's other things in the world besides books, too, you bookish fucks. We review cult movies. What kind of cult movies do we review, Travis?
All kinds of cult movies.
Like what?
Cultists of the cult, including Cult from the Future.
Cult movies from the future at kevinthestrange.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever other podcasts fuck, you fucks. The throng of writhing, chomping, snapping things erupted into the loudest cheer yet as Great Cthulhu stood from his throne and raised his arms into the sky, spreading his dragon-like wings as he did so, their vast width enough to stretch the entire length of the platform, dwarfing all other creatures standing below him.
Pingui, Mignoth, Cthulhu, Raleigh, Gnaga, Fataga!
The impossible horror screamed.
Pingui, Mignoth! Cthulhu, Raleigh, Gandago, Fatagan!
His congregation of monsters responded. And so the chant rose to the watery heavens, increasing in pitch and fervor until even the slaves below were forced to join in at the threatening tip of many stingers, claws, and slimy wormish appendages. Even Karen, sobbing hysterically from the floor of Cthulhu's grand platform, eventually gave in, resigned to her fate, and began to chant the hideous words that would spell an end to everything. High above, Yogg-Sothoth came into greater and greater focus as the chant continued, pulsing brighter and brighter in that unnameable color of horror. A spiral of smoky, liquid, solid-like substance descended from the center of its jelly-like body, splitting off into many smaller tendrils, each falling until they reached the top of each of the giant thrones encircling Cthulhu's platform. Hideous shapes began to form on those thrones, and their half-heard voices joined in with the nightmarish chant.
Pingui, Mignoth, Cthulhu, Relay, Ganago, Fatagan, Pingui, Mignoth, Cthulhu, Relay, Ganago, Fatagan, Pingui, Mignoth, Cthulhu, Relay, Ganago, Fatagan.
And then a funny thing happened. The hulking behemoth, towering above the congregation of horrors, stopped chanting. He staggered a few steps, nearly crushing Narelhotep beneath his immense bulk. Then, he clutched his stomach and let out a fart so long and loud, the entire proceedings ground to an immediate halt. Beady little fish eyes registering shock, Great Cthulhu opened his mouth to speak when another stomach cramp doubled him over. This time, putrid, liquidy pink shit shot out of his asshole, creating a huge puddle at his giant clawed feet. The tiny humanoids sharing the platform with him all staggered backward, trying to avoid the growing puddle of cosmic feces splattered against the stone floor, and now shared Boss Crab's look of astonishment. Another stomach spasm forced the gargantuan beast to his hands and knees, where he began to dry heave in his own shit. A final spasm ended with Great Cthulhu opening his impossible maw and projectile vomiting a glut of spew large enough to fill a small landfill before he collapsed headfirst into the fetid mixture of shit and puke. The entire banquet hall fell silent for a tense few moments. No creature dared to move a muscle, terrified that whatever force had managed to fell the Great Cthulhu would target them next. And then, each of the netherworldly tendrils attached to the grand thrones encircling the platform slowly pulled away, causing the half-formed denizens of unspeakable dimensions to vanish once again from the earthly realm.
"No! Wait!" Narelhotep screamed. "Pingui! Mignoth! Cthulhu! Relay! Gnaggle! Fatagan!"
The Shadow Man pumped his arms up and down, encouraging the contingent of monsters to rejoin his chant and continue the ritual.
"Pingui! Mignoth! Cthulhu! Relay! Gnaggle! Fatagan!"
But it was no use. The monster's eyes were locked on the twitching form of felled Cthulhu and the movement from the mountain of puke next to his head. A gnarled, acid-eaten human hand thrust up from the noxious sludge. The crowd of alien beasts gasped in unison as the haggard form of Ricky pushed itself out of the muck, so recently disintegrating his body. Impossibly, the man stood upright and smiled, or at least he appeared to smile. Most of the hair on his head had been eaten away, leaving nasty yellow exposed areas of his skull where there was not pink, welt-ridden flesh. One of his eyeballs had glazed over white, the eyelid and most of the flesh around his orbital bone all but gone. The tip of his nose had melted away, and both sides of his cheeks lacked all skin, save for two small strips next to his bruised and swollen lips, giving him the appearance of a sinister, grinning ghoul.
"No! No!" Narelhotep howled. How could?
He stammered in disbelief, darting his shocked eyes back and forth between the ghoulish man and the fallen god, still spasming on the floor.
"It was easy,"
Ricky said, brushing the remainder of gunk off his shredded flesh with bony skeletal fingers. His voice was now an octave lower, having no doubt swallowed some of Great Cthulhu's stomach acid during his short time in the beast's stomach, irrevocably damaging his vocal cords. "I didn't just poison the bodies of the people I was forced to murder and cook for you cosmic swine. I also poisoned myself." This time Ricky did smile. The action tore free the thin line of flesh still connecting his cheek and lip on the left side, causing his mouth to fall open in a hideous permanent grin. Narelhotep just stared, mouth agape.
"After Sam and I experimented on a few of Boss Crab's buddies, figuring out what combination of chemicals your kind is most susceptible to, I started drinking the poison little by little, building a tolerance to it, infusing it into my bloodstream. You ever seen the movie The Princess Bride?"
"What?"
"Nothing, never mind. Anyway, I've been poisoning myself a little every day, right up until today. I didn't think it would do anything besides kill you fucking waterlogged scum, but,"
he said, feeling his face and looking at his skeletal hands,
"I don't feel any pain at all. In fact, I feel strong. There must have been some kind of chemical reaction between the poison and Cthulhu's gut acid. That's unexpected."
The ghoulish man smiled and laughed again, causing his mouth to open up wider than his entire ghastly head.
"The poison was Sam's idea. He knew we couldn't escape. He even knew we'd be caught poisoning the food. He knew we couldn't trust those other people either," he said, motioning toward Karen. "He was a smart motherfucker. Smarter than me. But he knew I was stronger. Knew I could survive. So he chose me to drink the poison and chose himself to die. All I had to do was make sure Squiggleface over there ate me. Hell, that was the easy part.
Narelhotep recovered from his shock. He began to grow again. Two new pairs of arms burst out of his midsection. His fingers elongated and became sharp talons. His head stretched out, his mouth filled with red daggers. Four new sets of hateful, glowing eyes opened up below his primary pair. His torso grew until he towered over the ghoulish Ricky.
You will not outwit the Elder Gods!
Yeah, Ricky said. Already have.
Suddenly, Fishbowl tossed Karen to the ground, reached up and unlatched the clasp on its diving helmet, freeing the noxious substance residing inside. Just as suddenly, a deluge of brackish nightmare erupted from the helmet. It looked as if a fire hose had exploded from inside Fishbowl's suit, only it coiled through the air, waving and turning like a snake. The amount of hideous eyeball stalks, thin, hairy legs, dripping tentacles, and oozing mouths darting in and out of the thick geyser of black liquid was nearly incomprehensible. Narelhotep turned to see what was happening behind him too late. Fishbowl's chaotic form separated into two halves at its front, creating a sort of giant pincher claw, and darted forward like a striking snake, splitting the Shadow Man's beastly visage cleanly in two at the middle. Narelhotep's severed halves crashed to the floor. Weird, nearly translucent fluid gushed from the open wound of his trunk, while his orphaned legs twitched, now laying beside his head. At this point, the mob of creatures lining the stands broke their silence. They murmured among themselves, and some even began to move toward the banquet hall's exits. Fishbowl stalked forward, abandoning Karen where she lay, shocked and astonished on the ground, until its suited form stood shoulder to shoulder with the deformed, acid-bleached Ricky.
How could you betray your own kind?
Narelhotep stammered, clear fluid leaking from his fanged mouth.
"'Cause she's in love,'
Ricky said, ripping the buckles on the front of the wetsuit open, revealing dozens of tiny writhing forms latched onto what appeared to be monstrous nipples lining Fishbowl's humanoid midsection. Each of the little tentacled beasts bore a human head, the face of which was an exact copy of Ricky's. More monsters broke for the exits as the tide of the battle raging on Cthulhu's throne platform had clearly begun to turn in favor of the enemy. Now it was the slave contingent's turn to hurl insults at the fleeing beasts, causing some of the alien sea monsters to turn around and jump into the slave pit to attack the defenseless humans. Ricky patted Fishbowl on top of her diver's helmet.
One day, I was bored at McHuman's, so I decided to drag a stepladder over to this big scary motherfucker and jack off all over her open helmet. I figured, what the hell? What's the worst that could happen? She kills me? Good! I'd be out of this fucking wet nightmare once and for all. Turns out she liked it, though. So it became a thing. I'd jack off over her fishbowl head, and she'd tickle my balls with her gross-ass sloppy appendage till I'd bust a nut. She'd gobble them up. Next thing you know, we're in love, and I'm a daddy.
Ridiculous!
Narelhotep managed. The flayed ends of his severed halves had already begun to slowly work their way toward one another. The Shadow Man was regaining his strength, putting himself back together.
Yeah, maybe. But you know what? We beat you.
Ricky lowered his head to within inches of the wounded being's face. Then he whispered through thin, acid-eaten lips,
I know where the plug is.
Narelhotep's eyes widened and he lunged at the man with his huge clawed hands, but Ricky and Fishbowl were quicker. Ricky sidestepped the blow, darting behind the creature in the diving suit. Fishbowl's exposed appendage whipped down, scooping up Narelhotep's severed lower half. The chaotic, writhing appendage threw the dismembered limbs into the air and, before gravity forced them back down, the appendage transformed from a menacing claw into a grotesque mouth. It snatched the Shadow Man's legs out of the air and gobbled them down. Screaming out in terror, Narelhotep scrambled toward the edge of the platform, intent on throwing himself down into the slave pit, much more confident of his chances with the disheveled humans than the monstrosity before him. But the gigantic mouth, which housed many legs, feelers, eyeballs, and tentacles as fangs, swooped down and took the remainder of Narelhotep's body into its disgusting jaws.
We will never be stopped!
Narelhotep cried, feigning bravery, even as his voice quivered and broke, even as the stands emptied far below, removing any chance of a valiant rescue attempt by his fellow monsters, and high above him, the jellyfish-like body of Yogg-Sothoth disappeared from his place near the top of the domed banquet hall, closing the dimensional rift that would have allowed the Elder God's passage into this world. Narelhotep had failed his masters. Trying to maintain his dignity, the Shadow Man closed his eyes and sobbed out,
That is not dead, which can eternal lie, and...
Yeah, Ricky interrupted. And with a chomp and a bite, even evil fucks like you could die.
Narelhotep's screams of terror were cut short as Fishbowl made quick work of his mauled body, pulling the whole gory mess back inside her helmet. The top slammed shut with a loud clang.
Make sure you chew your food, Ricky said, grinning. We don't want him coming back up later.
With that, the ghoulish man turned around just in time to see Boss Crab fleeing between the two gargantuan bodies of the Leviathans toward the spiral staircase that wrapped around the humongous platform and led down to the slave pit below. Reopening the top of Fishbowl's helmet, Ricky stuck his whole arm inside, rooting around for something inside the impossibly large dimensions of the interior of the Cosmic Horror's suit. "Stop him," Ricky said, pulling out the very same fire axe Boss Crab had made him use to murder his best friend. Boss Crab stumbled down the staircase, frantically looking back over his shoulders every few steps to see if he was being followed. He made it around the pillar once, seemingly without notice. Confident he could make a break for it and lose himself in the chaos of the monsters and slaves below, he took off at a sprint, intent on clearing the last few steps four or five at a time when, wham, he slammed into something hard, causing him to stumble backward. Shaking his head to clear it, he looked up to see a titanic wall of scummy, fetid black water, home to thousands of disgusting, writhing things blocking his passage.
You work for me! You can't do this!
Boss Crab screamed, looking up the vast pillar to the top where Fishbowl stood, helmet open, preventing our former boss from getting any further. The creature said nothing. Boss Crab looked off to the side of the staircase, but it was impossible to judge the distance to the floor. He was afraid he'd crack his shell if he jumped. Hearing something fall and land behind him, the giant crustacean spun around, just in time to see Ricky raising up out of a crouch position, having jumped off the platform above.
"Don't look so surprised to see me,"
Ricky said, grinning that same huge, sinister new grin of his. Boss Crab skittered backwards until his shell bumped up against the wall of gunk created by Fishbowl. He dropped to his knees and clasped his claws together.
"Please, Ricky, spare me. I was good to you. I let you live. I was just doing what I was told."
"Yes," Ricky said, taking the fire axe in both hands.
"Yes? Yes, what?"
the crab sputtered.
"Killing my best friend. Seeing my co-workers ripped to shreds by monsters from an undersea hell. Being eaten by a god. It was all worth it to see you on your little knees begging for your life after you personally oversaw the deaths of tens of thousands of people just like me. It was so worth it."
With that, Ricky raised the axe over his head and plunged it down right between Boss Crab's eye stalks, splitting right through the thick shell, sinking into the monster's gooey brains. One of his eye stalks sagged to one side, twitching in such a way that finally made the huge crab look something other than surprised. Now he looked dead. Back on top of the platform, Karen stood alone. Fishbowl had her back to the crippled redhead, seemingly ignoring her. The scared girl stumbled around, trying to avoid looking at the gigantic fallen body of Cthulhu. To do so invoked waves of intense madness that even her current prone and defenseless state did little to abate. Taking deep breaths, Karen desperately scanned the platform for any means of escape. Anywhere to hide, to disappear before... A noise from the spiral staircase caught her attention. She froze. Click, clack, click, clack. The steady beat continued until she saw the hateful head of Ricky come grinning up the stairs. The noise was that of his exposed toes clicking against the stone floor, now little more than gnarled stumps of bone jetting out from his mangled shoes.
"Leave us," Ricky said.
Without hesitation, the fetid gunk rushed back inside Fishbowl's helmet. The top slammed shut, and the hulking creature stomped away, busying herself with untying the Leviathans from their post near the empty thrones. Ricky walked up to Karen until he hovered directly over her. He said nothing, only stared at her with that huge, whited-out eye bulging from its haggard socket. The crippled girl tried not to breathe through her nose and stifled a gag as the smell of his acid-burned skin wafted towards her.
"Ricky, I..."
she began, but the crazed, half-melted man grabbed her around the throat before she could finish. She cried out in pain as his skeletal fingers poked into her flesh, threatening to tear out her jugular. Ricky yanked the girl off her feet, dragging her, forcing her to stumble forward toward the platform's edge or have her throat ripped out in the process. Once there, he threw her to the ground, knelt on one knee, and grabbed her by the hair, pulling her toward the ledge until she teetered half on, half off the structure.
"Ricky, please,"
she begged, vertigo racking her body from head to toe as she looked down at the slave pit far below. The people looked like specks of pepper down there. She reached up and grabbed Ricky's hand, managing to turn herself around and face her aggressor. His devil face sneered back at her. She was close enough to see black, rotting spots along his gum line.
"Please, please what, bitch? Please don't kill you? Don't throw you down to those people down there you sold out just to save your own crippled ass?"
Ricky lifted her face until her nose nearly touched what was left of his.
You didn't think I'd actually pull it off, did you? You thought I was just some loser, slaving away at McHumans till my time was up and I got served as the next meal, didn't you? Bet you feel silly now, he cackled as he shoved her head back down. In a quiet voice, she said, I saved your life, Ricky. I saved you from the Berserker. Please don't kill me. Ricky smacked her across the mouth. Why? So we could both live happily ever after, cooking people at McHumans? I don't want you, Karen. I don't want that life. You chose the monsters. You chose slavery and misery over hope and freedom. Karen stopped crying then, stopped struggling. Her eyes narrowed and she lifted her head of her own volition, meeting the crazy man eye to eye. I did what I had to do, motherfucker. Yeah, to save my own skin. I'm 5'2" and my fucking legs barely work. I don't let that slow me down, and I fucking survived the end of the world on my own, by myself. If you were in my shoes, you'd have laid down and died when shit got crazy up there. When the sky bled, when your neighbors started spontaneously exploding. Yeah, I picked a side. And I fucked up. I chose wrong. And I'm gonna die for it. But you know what? Fuck it. I did what I did. And I'd do it again in a heartbeat. Because I do what I have to do to survive, Ricky said, quietly finishing her thought. He sat back, releasing his hold on her. He offered his hand. Puzzled, she took it. He stood and pulled her to her feet. You're a survivor, Karen. We need survivors. He nodded towards the slave pit, where a monster the size of a house, with the shape and consistency of a meatball and half a dozen thick stalks tipped with razor-sharp mouths, terrorized a group of humans in the far corner of the area. They need you. What we're about to do now, when we pull the plug and let the water drain back down to where it came from, it'll be worse than before. Much worse. Fishbowl rode one of the enormous fish-headed beasts over to where the two humans stood talking, leading the other by its saddle straps. Ricky climbed the huge, unmounted behemoth and then turned back to face Karen. How about you pick the right side this time? He said, grinning as he dug his heels into the fish beast's gills, causing it to leap up and over the shocked girl, soaring right over the edge of the platform. The Leviathan landed directly on top of the meatball monster. Splat! Smashing it to bits, covering the terrified slaves in gobs of gelatinous goop. Up on the platform, Fishbowl offered Karen her hand. The young woman took a deep breath and nodded, climbing the Leviathan, mounting the saddle as the gargantuan thing leaped down next to Ricky's fishy steed. By now, every last monster had fled the banquet hall. Ricky stood on his saddle, raising his arms up, commanding the attention of the battered and beaten people standing before him. What we're gonna do is impossible, but what I just did up there was too. We're gonna chase down every last one of those monsters, and we're gonna kill them. We're gonna pull the plug on this flooded world, and we're gonna swim back to the surface where we'll rebuild civilization so that my beautiful tentacle babies have a warm, dry place to lay their slimy little heads at night. And we need each and every one of you to do it. Are you with me? The slaves just stared at him, dumbfounded. I said, are you with me? Suddenly a huge shadow fell over the impromptu rally. All eyes left Ricky and fixated, horrified, over his shoulder. Ricky turned to see the gigantic form of Cthulhu rise up out of his puddle of shit and puke. The awesome monster extended his wings and raised his massive clawed arms into the air. When he spoke, his voice shook the entire hall.
Aien! Aien! Cthulhu! Vatagan!
He screamed. The slaves began to whimper and whine.
Aien! Aien! Cthulhu!
The elder god began again, but stopped mid-sentence. When he opened his mouth to chant again, his innards turned inside and shot out of his tentacled mouth in a torrent of gore. Great Cthulhu teetered forward once and then fell backward off the platform, crashing onto the stone floor behind the grand pillar towering above the slave pit with a tremendous thud. Cthulhu was dead. The people stood staring, mouths agape, totally unable to process what had just happened. Finally, Karen stood up in her saddle seat, thrust a twisted up little hand into the air and screamed,
Aye! Aye! Ricky! Ricky! Aye! Aye! Ricky! Ricky!
The slaves slowly joined in until the hall echoed with the chants of praise for their new leader, the man without a face, humanity's last hope.
Ricky smiled wide and screamed,
"Let's go pull us a motherfucking plug!"
And we are back.
Holy shit.
So that was McHumans.
That was McHumans.
So yeah, we had Ricky was regurgitated by old Cthulhu in the middle of the ritual to bring the rest of the old ones back from the other side.
He used himself as like a poison pill.
Yes, he did. And you know where I got that from?
Where?
It's ironic that we just covered that movie on Watching to Strangers, our sister podcast that I do with Travis, the Encyclopedia Britannica of cult film. I got that from the scene in The Princess Bride, where Wesley, the Dread Pirate Roberts, kills what is his name, Frizzetti.
Yeah.
Where he kills him by slowly ingesting the poison over the last several months or years. I forget how he puts it. But he basically creates an immunity to the poison in his body and then challenges the little man to a challenge of wits to try to figure out which drink the poison was in. And he had actually put it in both drinks because he had an immunity to it. Well, I decided to take that, put a twist on it, and I had Ricky poison himself slowly over time so that his body became poisonous, but he wasn't affected by the poison. And so when he was eaten by Cthulhu, it poisoned Cthulhu and caused him to regurgitate him. Absolutely ridiculous. Mm. First of all, why did he anticipate he was going to be eaten by Cthulhu in the first fucking place? He did poison all the food, so it was part of the... You know, part of the process.
Covering the bases.
So they were, you know, they were going to try to poison everyone anyway. So he poisoned himself in the process. It was just a nice little plot twist. It's a twist. What a twist! we had another twist at the end, and I told you, told everybody last week that that I wrote this with no outline, and I just let the story tell itself. Well, I had originally, when I got to the scene where Karen double crosses Ricky and the gang, I had figured surely that she was going to be killed, that Ricky was going to exact revenge on her after he got up out of Cthulhu's guts. And he does kill Boss Crab, but whenever he has the opportunity to kill Karen, he decides to keep her alive, and he uses the,
to get up in her guts.
He uses the logic that in a world that, you know, only the strongest will survive. Someone willing to do that to survive was worth having around. That her survival instincts are strong enough that she will be useful in the coming fight against the old ones. So and that sort of happened organically as I was writing that scene. It just sort of popped into my head that Ricky should let her live through that. And it was all that comes from just living in the character for a little while. And I lived in Ricky long enough. Through living, you know, getting out of Cthulhu's stomach and chasing down Boss Crab and killing him and all that, I had lived him long enough and I understood him well enough that he would make that decision. I realized that that's the decision he would make. There's no point in killing more humans. There's almost all the humans are already dead, and turning on each other is only going to give the old ones that much more of an advantage. And so he makes the decision to, you know, no, we're going to give you a pass on that. We're going to let you live because we need all the help we can get. So it's just one of those little things, and that happens almost every time I write, where characters will reveal their motivation to me, which is different from the motivation I tried to impose on them when I was outlining the stories. So it's just a little writer thing. Maybe readers don't give a fuck about that kind of stuff, but I think writers definitely find that cool, and it's just kind of a unique thing. A lot of readers probably don't realize that writers let their characters sort of come to life on their own and make their own decisions. So, and I think actors do the same thing. You're as you act as a character for long enough, you sort of you understand what that character would do in situations where maybe if you've got a scene to do and the scene isn't super completely outlined to every word or every movement, right, or it's not blocked out so you don't know how the body movement's going to go, the actor sort of instinctively starts to learn how that character will react in situations and have sort of that creativity and freedom to change, you know, maybe not change the script, but ad-lib enough in the parameters inside the
lines. Which makes sense. They're probably the one that knows the character the best, even better than the writer. The writer may have only spent, you know, a little bit of the time, you know, developing that character, but they've had to develop everything and memorize lines and so on and so forth. So they've spent a little more time just in that one character, where a writer has to focus on maybe a dozen, two dozen characters.
Yeah. There's actually two schools of acting. If you go to acting school, there's one school, and I forget the teachers that...
Side by side.
I forget the teachers that popularized... No, I forget the teachers that popularized each theory, but there's one theory that suggests that you, as an actor, need to develop all the backstory, all the family history, all of the pain and suffering, and all of the accomplishments and defeats. You fill in all the gaps of your character so that you can make informed choices about the character's life, and that helps you learn the character. But there's another school of acting that says everything that exists about that character is on the page. And there are actors that refuse to go outside of those boundaries at all. And neither one is right or wrong. I just thought it was interesting that there are two kinds. That there are certain actors that believe...
I didn't even say there's a third kind. I mean, like people like Johnny Depp or Leonardo DiCaprio, like, live the character.
Yeah, method acting, where they just literally become them. And they're
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah, they're that character all the time, no matter what. What was famously, Heath Ledger did that as the Joker. Mm-hmm. He never broke character, or rarely broke character when...
I was going to say, I seen a picture of him, Ollie, and Batman. I'm not sure. That's the Joker's character. It was the coolest picture I've seen in quite a while.
Yeah. So, that was McHumans. It's one of my favorite. It's a fan favorite, for sure. One of my favorite things to have written. And I said that I was going to talk about a tie-in after this episode.
That's right.
So, a lot of people didn't pick up on this, and that kind of bothers me that they didn't pick up on it.
In the Strangeverse.
In the Strangeverse, at the end of the novella Computer Face, a portal opens and figures step out onto this platform. And the figures are a scarred young man, a woman that clearly has cerebral palsy, and a giant, you know, suit that looks like a diver's suit. That's Fishbowl. Mm-hmm. And one of the...
It should have been so... I mean, it would have ruined the surprise of Fishbowl, but that's Cum Bucket now to me.
Cum Bucket. I'll have somebody call her Cum Bucket in a future book. But and then one of those roaches with baby heads is also with them. And the roach with the baby head talks in a deep black man's voice.
Hmm.
Similar to Chef from the McHumans book, but he died, right, at the hands of the roach baby head monsters. So why are they hanging out with a roach baby head monster that sounds like Chef? So a lot of people read that story, didn't even pick up on the fact that those characters from McHumans even appear at the end of Computer Face.
I didn't read that one. So.
Well, we'll get to it here on the show. And when we get there, when we get to that part, pay close attention, because those two books, those two book universes, the universe of Harry and Computer Face, cross over with Ricky in the McHumans universe, and they both of those series are going to have big effects on one another, because they actually spoiler alert, because I haven't written it yet, spoiler for everybody, Ricky and his gang left something behind in the computer face world, and they're going to have to go back and retrieve it. So I won't spoil any more of the ending of that book. I don't want you guys to know how it ended if you haven't read it yet. Jeremy hasn't read it yet, so But I did want to mention that there is a direct tie-in between McHumans and Computer Face. Those two worlds exist in the same Strangeverse. So I guess that's all we had to say about that. I wanted to talk a little bit about the website, right, before we get out of here?
Yeah.
We do have big plans for next month, so we got to mention those too. But since this was a...
it's also the last podcast of the month.
So. Oh, yeah. So we should have done that at the top of the hour, but yeah. I was talking about my literary awards. classic Kevin Strange fashion. I was too busy talking about myself. Yeah, at the end of every month, we give a shout-out to our patrons at patreon.com/KevinTheStrange. If you donate as little as $1 a month, you get special episodes of the podcasts. And if you donate, you know, there's different tiers. And if you donate at the $5 level, you actually get access to our readings here on Reading Strangers as full audiobooks, commercial free, before they air on the podcast.
So next month you'll get...
When we start the Jorek stories, you'll get the Jorek stories before they air fully on the show. I don't know exactly how we're going to do that. I don't know if we're going to dump all the Jorax at the beginning of the month or if we're going to just do them in full the week before they start. So the first story...
Yeah, that's probably the best way to do it.
The first one we're going to do is going to take 2 weeks. So we'll drop that before the first week starts. And then... but not release the second one yet. Then the second Jorax story will come out as the first story ends.
Just be... an easy way to handle it is as we start the story, you get the full dump, so yep. They don't get too far ahead.
And one of the perks you get at the dollar level and above is we give you a shout out on the podcast here.
That's
so
right.
We got a couple guys to shout out here.
Yes, we do. Oh my goodness, I totally locked up here for a second. We have
Jeremy Maddox.
Well, Jeremy Maddox, yeah. I was actually trying to go with the other one. But yeah, Jeremy Maddox is a big fan. He's been with us through a lot of the stuff, the old stuff we'd cover.
And we have Shane Vozar.
That's it.
Shane Vozar and Jeremy Maddox are our patrons for the month of February.
This is the second month Shane has been.
Yes, and the other thing that you get at the dollar level and above is when I release a new book, we have a special patron recognition page or a special thanks page that you guys will see your names in print there. So, and anybody can jump on to Patreon anytime at patreon.com/KevinStrange. There's links all over the website, and you can jump in and help fund this operation.
Even if you're one of those people that are just listening to make sure we don't talk about things we shouldn't talk about, wouldn't it be great to have your name as a thank you to Kevin Strange? I meant for literally a dollar, right? Or is that the $5 mark they get?
No, it's at the dollar.
At the dollar mark, you can have Kevin Strange thank you, even if you...
It's the $10 mark where once a year I'll release a novella
that's right.
is only released through the Patreon. And that's the $10 level. The $5 level, you get the audiobooks, and the $1 level, you get everything else.
And you have a book coming up, too, so that would get a deal. We talked about that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You get a $5 discount. So when that book goes live... when I Died in the Bed of Roses goes live, it's going to go live $15, signed and personalized and shipped directly from me to you. It's not if you buy it through Amazon, if you buy it through my Square store link. But if you are a patron, you get a special discount code where you will get $5 off, and you will be able to get that you'll be able to get the new book and every new book that comes out at $10, signed, personalized, and shipped directly from me to you. So that's a big discount, especially with, you know, I'm going to try to release 6 books this year. So if you get a $5 discount on all 6 of those books, that's a $30 savings right there. And, you know,
and all this extra content.
Yeah. Tons of extra content.
Your name will be in the book.
Right. So there's definitely a lot of reasons to jump into Patreon. We appreciate Jeremy and Shane for what they've done. And J.L. Koch last month, he was a $20 patron. And, you know, I don't expect anybody to... That's our $20 level is for rich fucks that don't have anything else to do with their money and just want to help support us. We love those guys. I didn't expect Mr. Koch to do that very long, and he didn't. He did it for 1 month. But, you know, if he did that at the dollar level, he would have funded us for almost 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, just that one $20 monthly drop on us was the equivalent of 20 months at $1. So we're gonna go ahead and give him props for a few more months, I think.
All right.
Because he definitely did us a nice service there. And I didn't expect him to do it for very many months, and he didn't, and that's fine. We do encourage everybody else to jump in at the dollar level or above if you want. And that's all we have to say about Patreon.
Yeah. Website.
Yeah, so... We also, of course, we're very active on kevinthestrange.com, and since it is Lovecraft Month here at in Strangeville, I did a couple of posts this month that directly reflect several things. I did a post this month covering the movie Arrival. Did I already talk about that?
Yeah, and I've actually seen it since.
Oh, then. Okay. What'd you think?
It was. Definitely interesting, and it's a slow place. It takes a while to
very slow burn
get there. But then once you start getting to the resolution, and you're like, "What?
Yeah,
what? No way! No way!" I mean, I don't want to spoil anything for anybody because
it'd be a shame to sit through the slow pace and not get the big payoff at the end.
Yeah, but it's a good one too. It's a nice what a twist. It's a good one, and it's one of those good nice twists that has been in your face the whole movie and you just didn't pay attention. And that's cool. Those are the best.
The nonlinear. Mm-hmm. I mean, from the geometry. Absolutely.
And that's exactly how Lovecraft works. And that got nominated for Best Picture. There is a Lovecraftian film that is nominated for Best Picture for the Oscars.
Be racist.
So I did do a review of that. And then I released for free the short story from the collection Last Gig on Planet Earth and Other Strange Stories. I released the story The Old Man in the Black Water. Now that is one that is very Lovecraftian without explicitly, that's why I released it this month, without explicitly calling forth any of Lovecraft's gods or any of his places or people. But I did infuse it with a very dreadful level. It's the story of this old man that lives on the waterfront, on a riverfront, and he's lived there his whole life, and his dad lived there before him. He's very stubborn and stuck in his ways, and this bubbling black sludge, almost oil or petrol like, starts coming up out of the middle of the lake, but it doesn't stop, and it starts to flood the little town, and it starts to, you know, as it creeps up over the bank and starts to flood the old man's house, his daughter and her young children are trying to urge him to leave the house, and he doesn't want to do it. And so it's while it deals with this Lovecraft like alien black sludge and what happens if you touch it, and the things that happen to people because of it, and the way people react, people sort of start building a religion around it very quickly. They start to build a religion around this sludge. But the main core of the story is this old man dealing with his stubbornness, and his family dealing with his stubbornness, and how they're going to handle their family crisis in the midst of this global crisis with this black water. So I thought it was a cool story. And definitely Lovecraftian and worth throwing out here. But another cool thing about The Old Man in the Black Water is I actually hired Danny Hicks from the Evil Dead series and Darkman series, one of Sam Raimi's regulars. I hired him. He's good friends with one of my friends out here, Timo. And I went over to Timo's. Timo has a studio called The Raven's Nest, and had Danny Hicks do the reading of that book, which, you know, if there were more than 4 weeks in a month, or McHumans was shorter than 4 weeks, maybe we would have played the audio version of that here on the show. But it's fairly short; we could do it in 1 week. But, you know,
or throw it up on Patreon.
Maybe we'll put. Well, it's on YouTube. It is for free on YouTube. Maybe I'll take it off YouTube and upload it for Patreon. I don't know. We'll see. But anyway, I did that, and then I also did a top seven. Our top six Lovecraftian films, my favorite six Lovecraftian films, almost all of which were just cheating, I know. And most people that looked at that list probably think I'm fucking full of shit, but almost everyone on the list is a Jeffrey Combs starring, I can't think of the fucking filmmaker's name now, Brian Yuzna's the producer, and God, what the fuck is the director's name? The director of Reanimator, the director of From Beyond, and they did Dagon and all that stuff. It's I've just got Patrick Stewart stuck in my head. It's certainly not Patrick Stewart.
That would surprise the hell out of me.
Anyway, I know exactly who he is, and I've got his face is right there, but I can't think of his name because I'm stupid. I did too many drugs when I was younger. I can't remember things.
Stuart Gordon.
See, that's why I thought Patrick Stewart was stuck in my head, because Stuart Gordon is the guy's name. So almost all of them on the list are Stuart Gordon, Brian Yuzna productions, and people are going to think that's cheesy because there's a lot of other Lovecraft stuff out there. There's a group called the H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society, who's done a couple of very, very direct adaptations of Lovecraft. And I just don't like them as much. I like the cheesy 1980s rubber monster, titties and gore Jeffrey Combs movies. I just do. And so the majority of the list is that. I left out a lot of stuff. I could have made a 20 movie list that's worth watching, but I stuck to just the ones that I think are my favorite. So I think that's about it. For the month of February, did you have anything else you wanted to talk about?
No.
For February?
We're wrapping it up.
Black History Month.
Yep, and didn't get
like... Did you check out that black porn star I told you about? Brittany White? Yeah, Brittany White?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, did you?
I masturbate so much, man.
Well, yeah, me too.
You probably told me about it. I checked her on Pornhub.
Yeah, Brittany White, for all those at home that want a nice black girl to check out in the pornography, definitely check out Brittany White. She's a she's an up-and-comer. Literally.
We're getting come up in her.
Yeah, exactly. So we're closing the chapter on Lovecraft for the month. Yeah. And originally, just for all of you haters out there who only hate listen to Kevin Strange, I had some really controversial stuff that I was going to come at the Lovecraft month with, but in the end, I decided that I just want to focus on us. There's so much rich stuff in the Strangeville universe that goes on every month that we can sit here and talk about this. Clearly, we can talk an hour a week just about Strangeville and never really even have to mention.
And so much more fun. I mean, yeah. Next month, Barbarian Month, is going to be so fun.
So here's the transition. H.P. Lovecraft and Robert E. Howard were very close friends. Robert E. Howard is the creator of Conan. And Conan started the sword and sorcery barbarian literary genre. Like, wasn't the first ever to do it, but he popularized it. It became hugely popular in the Weird Tales and all those small fiction magazines, speculative fiction magazines. And it exploded into a genre to this day that continues to flourish, the sword and sorcery genre. So we're going to celebrate that transition from the friends, H.P. Lovecraft and Robert E. Howard. We're going to transition from our Lovecraftian month into our sword and sorcery month, our barbarian month. And we are going to play. We've already recorded two of the three Jorik stories that are going to come out in a collection. I haven't named the collection yet, so we're not going to say the name here, but this year we're going to have a collection, a three-story collection of Jorik. And that will start next week, the first week of March, with, I think we're going to go ahead and start with Jorik and the Shoggoth Steel. Even though it's linearly, it's the very last story that's going to happen before the first Jorik novel. But it's the first Jorik story I ever wrote. So it's the newest in the timeline, but it's the first one I wrote, and I want to talk about these stories in the order that I wrote them so that I can explain the evolution of this character.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, the only thing, I mean, the few people will be, you know, hoping for more of the characters. When we originally did Jorik and Shoggoth Steel when we were recording it, you mentioned characters, and I was like, what is this? And then the next story we were just recorded last weekend, I was like, oh, we're getting a little more of these characters. So,
and in the third story that I'm writing, Jorik and the Black Wall, we get a really big look into Jorik's past. So the three stories are going to be where Jorik's at right now, an expansion of Jorik and his friends, characters, and adventures, and then a look back at who Jorik was and what led him to become the great warrior that he is today.
Non-linear.
So it's very non-linear, but so is Conan and that kind of stuff. It's like none of this stuff happens chronologically. And these are stories, so they fall all over the timeline. And it's just going to be fun. And we'll explain each story as we get going.
And I'm sure there will also be a lot of bonus episodes because of what we're doing in March.
Yeah, we're going to Horror Hound Weekend in March, and we'll definitely do Horror Hound coverage. We're going to bring our equipment, and we'll do at least one show.
Makes me want to do the Reading to strangers in Cincinnati.
Yeah, we're going to Cincinnati.
We need a music person.
Are we going to Cincinnati, or are we going to...
I thought you said Cincinnati, Cleveland, or...
No. Yeah, we're going to... No? Is it... What are the three cities? Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Columbus. Yeah, we're going to Cincinnati.
Okay.
We're going to Cincinnati.
I was
going to
say, fucking my shit up.
Cincinnati. So we might get some one-on-ones. We might get some...
If you ever wonder where Kevin and Jeremy's going to be.
We might get some one-on-ones with
hanging
some...
with strippers in Cincinnati.
Yeah, hopefully. We're last I heard that... The stripper...
All our shit falls apart the week before, though. How many times we were supposed to hang on it? This was supposed to be...
Yes, I know. So don't disappoint the fans with what it could have been. It is what it is. But the stripper calendar is supposed to be done. Supposedly, they're going to sell it at our table. We will see if all that comes to fruition. And we will have... Maybe we'll have some stripper interviews. Maybe we'll get some stripper interviews. We'll get some... We could definitely get some filmmaker... interviews. Oh my God, Albert Pune, one of my favorite filmmakers of all time, is going to be there. That'll be a lot of fun to hang out with him. He's the guy that did Cyborg with Van Damme from back in the day. That's the one he's most famous for. He's most famous for Cyborg.
I haven't even looked at who's going to be there that weekend.
Well, he cast Ellie Church in his newest film, and they're premiering it there. So we're going to be hanging out with Brian and Ellie, and hopefully Albert Pune hangs out with all of us outside of the convention. We'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll have probably some bonus material, or maybe some material we'll just put on. Maybe we'll just, you know, it'll be an episode that we did at the show. Maybe one of the weeks it'll still be a Jorak episode, but it'll be recorded on the road.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Bonus or whatever. We'll figure it out as we go.
Yeah. Which we always do.
Yeah.
So much. until next month, gang. Until next week. Next month. Till Barbarian Month, till Jorak Month, we will see you guys later. You got anything else?
Nope.
Remember, gang, keep
reading. Got you.
Keep rapping.
Oh, wait, that's how we need it ended. Have you ended it yet?
No.
Come on, let's hear some of them bursts.
I don't even remember.
Come on.
You
want me
to drop some hot bars?
Drop some
hot
bars.
You want me to drop a hot 16?
Yeah, you can't drop a hot 16?
I don't remember. I was 20 years old. I don't remember the fucking shit I wrote.
To make some shit up, you're a writer, motherfucker.
No, I don't want
to
rap. I'm not rapping. All right, we'll see you guys next month.
See
you.
All music featured on the Reading to Strangers podcast provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. http://creativecommons.org/license/by/3.0/.